Welcome back to What's Ailing America, the ultimate in reality radio. And we're trying to do the show today on Skype after having it revamped by my IT guy, and hopefully this will work out. On the show, you will learn, not only learn what is ailing America and the world, but you will also learn how to recognize the patterns used by the predators controlling our world. The ability to overstand and see the big picture is a critical skill necessary to formulate our solutions. We need to escape the living hell that we find ourselves in. Regarding healthcare, this became self-evident to me in 1999 when I created the big picture of all diseases, which is the first diagram which can be found on both of my websites, reversingvaccineinducediseases.com, as well as drcarly.com. As it turns out, the combination of various assaults on our immune system is what causes symptoms, which the medical mafia has put into boxes named diseases. Learning how to stop these assaults as well as detox those which have already occurred is what allows healing to occur on every level. Facing the reality that the psychopaths which control our world have created hell on earth intentionally is the critical step in bringing forth the anti-hell. Overstanding the simplicity of the master template of how this hell has been created makes this antidote equally simple. We don't need the details. The devil's in the details. All that is necessary is for people of conscience to say no to their predators, stop loving them, forgiving them, making excuses for them, and to stop paying cash for being harmed. It is my goal to give you the truth of what I have learned, to arm you with the confidence to ask the hard questions, which will not only cause the predators to run away, but will also cause those around you to face the monsters destroying their lives, especially if they have psychopaths and parasites in their inner circle, which is a very hard reality to face. I have had to face that myself. Silence is consent. Speaking the truth and asking hard questions in great numbers is the road to anti-hell. Bypassing religious beliefs that only some man in the sky can save us is very important, as religion is apparently a firewall in the brain that prevents logic, reasoning, formation of a plan to save ourselves and then taking action. For only acting on the truth will set you free. Believing the lies or doing nothing will enslave you. Confronting evil with documented truth and creating cutting-edge solutions is all we need to do. Compromise with evil is impossible. As one of my favorite contributors, Dan McCarthy, always says, we cannot compromise with evil. You can't make a deal with the devil. And when evil's on the run, that's when we press harder. Whatever false beliefs you have about any subject, that is what's being used to control you. As Henry David Thoreau said, for every 1,000 hacking at the branches of evil, there's one striking at the root. Learning to see the master template of the predator's crimes against humanity, as well as how they use psyops operatives and people's beliefs to control them, will help people of conscience to destroy the root of the evil that has created a hell on earth and save us from what's going on. If you think my work is important, please tell others about this show. And within the next couple of weeks, I will also have a show on the TNS network out of the UK, which is going to be called What's Ailing the World. You can support this work by donating on the PayPal buttons on either of my sites. You can help friends or family who are too ill to face reality by getting a consult for them and helping them escape from the death and disease being caused by the medical devils. You can contact me by emailing me at drcarly@gmail.com or calling me at 828-294-0662. Between 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, any day of the week. Thanks to Ron at Dependable Voice, I also have a toll-free number, which works for the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean. That number is 888-321-6751. If you get a strange message that the number has been disconnected or whatever, have the operator dial it for you, because interesting things are happening. My Skype username is drcarly1, but I use Skype primarily for international clients. So if you have access to the toll-free number wherever you are, please call me on the toll-free number instead of Skyping me. I just have too many Skype contacts, and I prefer to talk to people on the phone if possible. I do not practice medicine nor give medical advice. Rather, I teach you what I would do if I were you to reverse disease with natural therapies in people and in pets. There's a chat room on OrionTalkRadio.com on my show page, and recent show archives are posted on the station site as well. Archives of shows for the past few years can also be found at the LightOfDayRadioShow.com. Click on Dr. Carly Archives, and those archives are actually given with the answer to the question, what's ailing America, so that you will know what the shows are about. There are many ways to listen to shows here on Orion Network, so check that out on the homepage. And please also support this network by donating to the homepage and buying a T-shirt, so you can walk around advertising this network, which has, in my opinion, the greatest group of people telling the truth, and help to spread the word about where people can go to find out what's going on. If you have questions or comments during the show, you can call in at 716-213-6816 or toll free, thanks to Ron again, at 888-320-6151. However, we do ask that listeners not use a toll free number to listen to the show. Very important. Callers need to mute their phones while waiting to be brought on, so as not to cause interference with whoever is speaking. And pretty much I would appreciate if callers call in during the second half of the show, in the second hour, so we have enough time to get out the information that we're getting out for the show topic. Okay, one of the most important things you can do to protect yourself and your loved ones from organisms being created by the mad scientists at over 1,300 biowarfare labs in the U.S., is purchase a silver lungs colloidal silver generator. Go to the link section of reversingvaccineinduceddiseases.com to learn how to obtain the silver generator I use and recommend for my clients and myself and my three dogs and two cats. I'll take this every day. And it's really pretty amazing how you can protect yourself. Okay, on today's show, What's Ailing America? We're going to be talking about HIV with one of the most important people I've come across in many, many years, Dr. Nancy Banks, who has written a book, AIDS, Opium, Diamonds, and Empire, The Deadly Virus of International Greed. Dr. Banks is the only medical doctor I have found in 15 years of doing what I do who talks about vaccinations as weapons of genocide. Yes, folks, I have finally found another MD who speaks the truth to the highest level. This is very important. And we're going to be talking about her book and some stuff she's taught me about HIV. It's amazing how we've been lied to about everything. And all of you need to learn these informational factoids so that you can share it with others. Okay, I can't hear the music. I hope that we're still on the air. Looks like we are. All right. Since I don't hear any commercials coming on, let me say before we go to a break that I received a article from VacTruth.com talking about, let's see, this was written by Catherine Framowicz, entitled The Varied Types of Vaccines. I encourage all of you to go to VacTruth.org and check this out. She talks about one of the seven types of vaccines being DNA vaccines. All vaccines are DNA vaccines because they're all being, you know, used to inject you with foreign DNA. And when I approached her on this, problem in her article, she suggested that I go for treatment of my mental illness and get an exorcism. So, you know, I just wanted to mention that on the show. Okay. hopefully we'll be hearing the music shortly, telling us we're going to a break. And I'll be bringing our special guest, Dr. Nancy Banks, on to educate you as to the lies you've been told about AIDS. It's truly amazing. Okay. Yep, looks like Skype is working. How great is this? We'll be back after these messages with my special guest, Dr. Nancy Banks. Stay tuned. And we're back with What's Ailing America, where our answer today is lies about HIV with my very special guest, Dr. Nancy Banks. Before I bring her on, let me just give one additional update to my listeners in Long Island. On Saturday, February 25th at 6 o'clock p.m., there's going to be another meeting of the Long Island Skywatch Group taking place. And so if you are in that area, I strongly suggest that you contact Cynthia Pakulis at Long Island Skywatch at yahoo.com and participate in this amazing action of the school teacher who is actually bringing the chemtrail issue to her local legislators. All of us have to participate in stopping the crimes against humanity. And on that note, I have to say, Dr. Banks, when I found out about you, somebody sent me a link to your YouTube, which is entitled Dr. Banks on Vaccinations. And as I watched it, I was stunned, shocked, and so happy to find one other MD who talks about genocide in the same breath as vaccines. And I just so much appreciate your work. Just welcome to the show. What else can I say?
Well, thank you for having me.
And let me just say that Nancy Banks is a graduate of Harvard Medical School. We won't hold that against her, you know, skull and crossbones and all that. Trained in surgery, obstetrics, and gynecology and gynecological oncology, she practiced general obstetrics and gynecology for 25 years. In addition, she earned an MBA in finance. So she's been, you know, researching the monsters for some time. I'm sure at the beginning, not even realizing it. And let me strongly recommend her book, AIDS, Opium, Diamonds, and Empire, The Deadly Virus of International Greed, which I had obtained some time ago. And what I want to concentrate on, Dr. Banks, is your amazing timeline at the beginning of this book. Because in my opinion, this timeline in itself is reason to buy the book. And what you have uncovered in terms of the, as you call it, a small timeline of a large syndrome. But I want to give you an opportunity to just give an overall intro, whatever you would like, because let me just say that I went to medical school from 1983 to 1987, just when this whole HIV thing was coming out. We were taught about the four H's, and I always thought, gee, that was a group, you know, when I was involved in 4-H, you know. Of course, the hemophiliacs, the homosexuals, heroin addicts, and what's the other H? But whatever. You know, that's what we were told, and this was the group that apparently God had decided to infect with this, you know, very very dangerous virus. And that's how, you know, we were taught. And of course they showed us those electron micrographs that you discuss in your timeline. And you know, I believed all that crap. And apparently that's what it is, crap. So please inform our listeners what you've learned.
Well, I got involved in well, first of all, I am trained as an obstetrician, gynecologist, and also as a surgeon. And so as a gynecologist, the things that we take care of and specialize in are sexually transmitted diseases. And the HIV/AIDS paradigm stated that that the HIV, which was a retrovirus, could be transmitted sexually. And I really wasn't seeing that in my practice, and I practiced in the New York City metropolitan area, and I also was on the staff of several major New York hospitals and saw clinic patients and taught residents. Then I moved to Washington, D.C. Then I moved to Washington, D.C. maybe about 8 or 9 years ago, where at first the problem had been largely confined to the homosexual community. That was the majority of people who were coming down with this particular problem. And then they were saying it was largely a problem now with black females. And for me, as an African-American female, I was going, that absolutely epidemiologically doesn't make sense, because if you know anything about the way diseases spread, they spread from community to community. They don't jump communities, which is to say this. About 20% of people who say they're homosexual also may be bisexual, which means that they would be having sex with women in their community. So you would expect that those communities where the HIV/AIDS virus was first identified, New York, San Francisco, and Los Angeles, that the white women in those communities would also be developing HIV and AIDS, which was not really happening. So there was a small number of IV drug users, but that was a very small number, and of course now they don't even talk about hemophiliacs, because none of the studies have indicated that HIV is sexually transmitted, but especially among hemophiliacs. It happens to be something with the multiple transfusions that they're getting. So I started looking at this problem. So I started looking at the problem scientifically. I wanted to know what was really going on behind the propaganda, and that's when I began to do reading of the original research and discovered that there was a whole lot of controversy, and they were presenting HIV and AIDS to the general population as if there were no controversy. But there were huge controversies from the very beginning. And one of those controversies was developed by a virus researcher, a very world-renowned virus researcher, who wrote a book by the name of Peter Duisberg. He wrote a book basically stating that the what they were calling AIDS or immune deficiency was a subset of the drug problem. So, of course, in Washington, D.C., if anyone knows anything about the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, it has one of the biggest drug problems, in concentrated drug problems in the country. And so I began to look at what, in fact, drugs do to the immune system, various types of drugs, whether it's opium or crack cocaine. And what I found is that many of the street drugs, which young people have had access to over the last generation, in fact are immune suppressive. But not only that, many of the pharmaceutical drugs that people use are immune suppressive.
Yeah.
For example, one of the when I was a surgical intern, one of the rotations was on a transplantation unit. And when I was working on a transplantation unit, we used to give patients immunosuppressive drugs so that they would not reject their transplants. And one of those drugs, which was called azathioprine, had the same chemical profile as the AIDS drug, which was introduced, called AZT. And what we were finding with the patients who we had to suppress to receive their to keep their transplant, sometimes they would develop Kaposi sarcoma, which was an AIDS-defining cancer, they said, and opportunistic infections. And guess what? About 6% of those patients who developed those problems, if we stopped the azathioprine, the the Kaposi sarcoma, which was a cancer, could completely reverse. So all of the things that we were learning about a cancer being irreversible and opportunistic infections leading to death, even in the literature, the scientific literature, was there to show that we could reverse it. And yet it was being ignored in favor of giving people toxic drugs.
Well, not only reverse it, but reverse it by stopping the drugs. And this is what I've been talking about for 15 years. Our profession is killing people. Yes, this is so important.
So, one of the things, that's when I really started to not only read what other people had written, but also go to the medical literature. And and this is what happens, unfortunately, in medical school, and because people are taught what the pharmaceutical industry pretty much wants them to learn, and also doctors and medical students are overwhelmed with work, which means many of them lack the time or the ambition to read further, to read the journals and to actually read the literature that might contradict what they're being told in their classes or at the conferences which they are required to go to keep their license. And those conferences are all run by the pharmaceutical industry. And so it's really very difficult to get a balanced picture of what is happening scientifically because we're only given one side of the story. And a side which really promotes one idea.
Right. Well, it's not only difficult, it's impossible. And I don't know if you're aware of the book, The Medical Mafia, by Dr. Guylaine Langtoda, a Canadian physician who's written the entire history of how our profession has been corrupted by Big Pharma. But there's no question that Big Pharma runs the show, and anybody that steps out of the box is going to be attacked.
Well, I've read her book, and even before her, there was a Dr. Josephson who wrote Your Life is Their Toy, and he was writing, I think, in the 1940s. And basically, he was chronicling these things, a generation before we were even born. So this is not a new phenomena.
Okay. And we run out of time so fast on this show. I just want to start getting into your very important timeline, your information. First of all, let me say that you talk in great detail about AZT. And as I had informed you about, I attended a conference in Washington, D.C. in 2000, which was run by the National Medical Association. And there was a conference goer. I was in a separate subcategory involving natural medicine, obviously a very small subcategory involved in that conference, where there was a contributor by the name of Phineas P.D. Vincent Bike Sr. And he actually stated during the conference about how he was a researcher into AZT. He wrote, I think it was a 600-page synopsis on how dangerous AZT was, and the result was his entire family was murdered. His house was burnt down with his wife and children in it. I don't know if you've been able to contact him, but this is the consequence of anybody trying to, you know, speak the truth about these issues. And in fact, as you document so well in your book, this AZT, which I was amazed I didn't know until I read your book, it was found in herring sperm. You have to laugh when you read this stuff. I mean, they took herring sperm and they, you know, synthetically altered it to make this drug AZT, which is a destructor of the immune system.
Well, also, AZT was actually designed to be a chemotherapeutic agent, but it was found to be too toxic to give to cancer patients, and yet it was being given to this other group of patients who were immune suppressed and recommended that it be given without stop. For example, chemotherapy is fairly toxic medicine by anybody's stretch of the imagination. But no oncologist would recommend that a person simply take chemotherapy for years and years, because they realize that it's so toxic that the chemotherapy would likely kill the person before the cancer did. So the idea that you would give a person a drug that they knew was toxic, genotoxic, and carcinogenic, and give that drug to people who were already very immune suppressed was just, the words cannot express how I feel about something like that happening. And because we're really talking about Mengele, Joseph Mengele, World War II concentration camp kind of stuff here. But the problem also, as I show in my timeline, I start my timeline in the 1930s with the awarding of the Nobel Prize in Biochemistry to Otto Warburg. And why was that so important? Otto Warburg was a scion of the very the Jewish banking family, the Warburgs. But he was a scientist and a very brilliant one. And he looked and he discovered that almost all cancers, there are two types of energy metabolism in the cell. One type of energy metabolism takes place in an organelle called the mitochondria, and it's called oxidative phosphorylation. And the other type of energy production of a molecule called ATP takes place in the cytoplasm, and it's called glycolysis. What Warburg discovered is that cancer predominantly uses this second type of energy, this less efficient type of energy, which increases the lactic acid and has particular characteristics. By the 1960s, they were beginning to really understand the biochemistry of cancer, and understanding the biochemistry, which means that they would have been able to develop nutrients to reverse the process. Just as Warburg's work was coming to fruition in the late 60s, a few years later, when Nixon was president, they started the war on cancer and totally took all the money away from that research and started looking at viruses as the cause of cancer. They knew viruses weren't the cause of cancer. Per se, they knew that viruses could be a factor in creating cancer, but they weren't the real cause of cancer. But they put all their money there. And just as that, and he also declared the war on drugs the same year, because they started importing drugs into the United States from Vietnam as a result of that Vietnam War.
Right. So, if I could, I want to get into this a little bit, because I have thousands of pages of documents of the Special Virus Cancer Program that Nixon started at the Fort Detrick, Maryland institution, and then it spread out throughout, you know, every medical institution, veterinary school, big pharma institution, etc. There's no question in my mind that viruses are involved, because if you're going to inject viruses into people through inoculations, that's a distraction for the immune system, and the immune system's job of, you know, monitoring the body and get rid of cancer cells, it has a problem once you're injecting all these viruses. But what is your big picture take of the Special Virus Cancer Program?
Because this is the issue, and this is exactly what Warburg said. Cancer is a problem of the energy system. There are many things that can alter the energy system in such a way that it's not functioning optimally. For example, toxins can do it, such as the toxins in the vaccines, mercury, aluminum. Viruses can do it, because then the body is fighting to overcome the viruses. Chronic infections, such as parasites, can do it. Other things, chronic stress can do it, because it depresses the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, and you have an outpouring of steroids from the adrenal, and the system is unbalanced. So what Warburg was saying is that you can have a lot of secondary causes of cancer, but the primary cause was an alteration in the energy system leading to an imbalance in the processes of the cell. So the issue is, what are the processes? And that's what I was thinking about. What are the processes? What are the processes that we understand at the cellular level? Now, one of the reasons I think that they were doing the cancer virus program is to introduce all of these vaccines into the environment and to convince people that they needed all these vaccines, because the vaccines are filled with DNA fragments, with toxic chemicals, and with adjuvants, all of which can suppress the immune system.
Yes, exactly. That's been my message for all these years. I just thank you so much for speaking the truth on these issues. Yes, and in fact, it's very obvious. And I just have to jokingly say that, you know, it's equivalent to Obama getting the Nobel Peace Prize. You know, for these minions to get the Nobel. Yeah. For these minions to get the Nobel Prize for what they're doing, which is actually the opposite of which we would hope, in regards to, you know, the whole cancer situation, great detail.
Hello?
Because you're going to teach me, in regards to this whole retrovirus thing, because what you uncovered in your timeline is the enzyme reverse transcriptase. It was, according to your timeline, discovered in 1970. And, you know, I was taught this in medical school, and it made perfect sense to me. And so could you please tell the listeners how all of this is a fraud?
Well, one of the, when people say that they have identified HIV, they don't really mean that they've identified a unique virus. What they're talking about are characteristics that may indicate that a particular virus is present. And those characteristics are proteins, which they claim are proteins from this virus, and an enzyme, which is a protein that helps cellular processes along, called reverse transcriptase. But they knew already when they said they found reverse transcriptase in the cells that they mixed with cancer cells from AIDS patients, they knew that reverse transcriptase was not unique to retroviruses. They already knew that. So saying that they found reverse transcriptase and therefore they found a unique virus was simply fraudulent. And we found letters in the National Archives from the electron microscopist by the name of Gonda to Gallo, who is claimed to have identified this HIV, telling him that these electron micrographs are not of an isolated virus sample. They are simply cellular debris. And so the proteins which they identified, claiming to be HIV proteins, all of them are cellular proteins. And the reverse transcriptase is simply there whenever the cell is under stress and it needs to repair. It's sort of a DNA repair enzyme. So it's in everybody's cells. So that's part of the way they use technology to bells and whistles of technology to act as if they've done something spectacular, when all along it's much of it is fraudulent.
Well, not only that, but you see, this is how the disinformers come into the mix, because we have Leonard Horowitz doing multiple YouTube videos of his information about Robert Gallo. Okay, there's the music. I have to go to a break. We'll be back after these messages. I want to pick up on this because this is what you have to know. If somebody's a member of a secret society, you got to suspect them, and Leonard Horowitz is the Knights of Malta. Okay, we'll be back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
back with What's Ailing America, where our answer today is lies about HIV with my very special guest, Dr. Nancy Banks. And Dr. Banks, I just have to say that in reading your timeline alone, I mean, your book is outstanding, but just the timeline in showing all of these different things where you explain about the TH1 and the TH2 cells, the TH1 producing nitric oxide gas and the TH2 inhibiting those gases. I was like cracking up as I'm reading this because you mention on page XXI of your book about this minion Firshgott. Dr. Firshgott is at my medical center, Downstate Medical Center in Brooklyn, and got the Nobel Prize for his work in regarding to nitric oxide. And here we have these minions saying that nitric oxide is a good thing. It's actually going to open up your vessels. It's going to vasodilate and prevent, you know, cardiovascular events and things of that nature. But you have exposed its relationship to actually causing a problem, you know, with the immune system. And
they're still not teaching this in medical schools, which is really very important information. What was discovered in the 80s is that there CD4 cells are a type of lymphocyte. Lymphocytes are a type of white blood cell, and the theory of HIV was that the HIV, this virus, retrovirus, was attacking and killing these CD4 T cells. Now, and that's why people went on to develop the immune suppression, because the immune suppression was actually the killing of these CD4 cells. Of course, I just want to say briefly that they have never been able to prove that the HIV kills the CD4 cells. But the problem with that theory also became very obvious in the 80s when it was discovered that there are subsets of these CD4 cells. One subset primarily relates to what is called the humoral immune system, and that's the part of the immune system that makes proteins called antibodies. And antibodies are like little soldiers in the blood that guard against larger invading molecules or bacteria. But there's also another part of the immune system called cellular immunity. And the cellular immune system is largely responsible for taking care of smaller organisms that invade the intracellular space. And the way they do this is through this little molecule called nitric oxide. So nitric oxide not only acts as a sort of a weaponized gas, it acts as a messenger, and it has multiple functions depending on the situation in the organism in which it is needed. But because there are two types of CD4 cells, the HIV people have never come to grips with that. And so they have never been able to explain, for example, if this HIV was just killing off all of these CD4 cells, why is there an elevated antibody count in these people? Because if it's killing the CD4 cells, all of them, the people would not be able to mount an antibody count, and they would be like the boy in the bubble who has a global immune deficiency. But they only had, right, the people who had the AIDS only had a particular immune deficiency, and it had to do with cellular immunity, not with humoral immunity. And they don't really teach that to the medical students. So when they're looking at the CD4 test, and I've looked at the CD4 test, and I've looked at a technique called flow cytometry, which they use to count the CD4 number, and I found that the flow cytometry is not a reproducible test. It probably should never have been introduced to use in patients. It was a laboratory procedure, and that it doesn't identify the subpopulations of CD4 cells. It only identifies the aggregate population of CD4 cells, which really tells you nothing about the status of the patient. But the bigger problem is that they don't even know what they put this test on the market before they even knew what were the normal levels of CD4 cells in the general population.
Well, not only that, but one of the most important things that you mentioned in your timeline is that actually the testing that they're doing for the HIV itself, the electron microscopy, you know, as you state, they're basically showing that the cells are extruding waste products. This has nothing to do with the virus. It's a total fraud.
But this is another big deal, especially as I'm an obstetrician, we now know that 8% of the human genome is made up of what they call retroviruses. So the question is, what are these retroviruses doing in the human genome? Well, during pregnancy, the placenta is full of these retroviruses, so clearly they have some role in the development of the human fetus during the course of that 9-month period. So these retroviruses are elevated in pregnancy, and so where do they do the HIV test, which cross-reacts with, first we thought there were 70 things, now we have up to 100 different things we found that the HIV test cross-reacts with? Well, one of the things it cross-reacts with is pregnancy. So how do you do a test in a pregnancy clinic that cross-reacts with pregnancy?
All right. Can you explain to the listeners what a retrovirus is? Because, you know, people are not at your level of medical understanding. Just explain that, please.
There are two types of genetic material. One type is called DNA, the other type is called RNA. So viruses can either have DNA as their genetic material or they can have RNA as their genetic material. So retroviruses are viruses that have RNA as their genetic material. And so that's basically why they're called retroviruses, because they are what we call reverse transcriptase, and that's why we were talking about the enzyme reverse transcriptase before, because they are made sort of backwards. They are reverse transcripted into DNA and then forward into RNA again. So it's a little more complicated process, but they are essentially viruses that have RNA as their genetic material.
Sorry, I always have sleepwalk units going back and forth in front of my house at the times I do my show. I didn't hear the last part of your comment.
So basically, I was just saying that retroviruses have RNA as their genetic material, as opposed to some other viruses that have DNA as their genetic material.
Right, and these antibody tests. And this is one of the most important parts of your research, in my opinion, is that we have so many people that are being accused of infecting others with HIV, and this is being based on these tests that they're doing, and these people are innocent.
This gets back to the virus, the vaccine issue that you talk about so brilliantly, and that is that vaccines, why do we get vaccinated? Well, the theory is that if you give someone an attenuated virus, that they will mount an antibody response, and as a result of having elevated antibodies, in the future, if they meet that organism, they are able to remember, the body remembers it and is able to attack it. But in HIV, it's been just the opposite. When they have elevated antibodies, they are then said to be infected, they are not immune, and they will go on to develop these diseases and die, which was exactly the opposite of what they're teaching about every other virus and vaccines. But the other important thing is that many vaccines also, if you have a vaccine, your antibodies go up and they cross-react with the HIV test. For example, if you have a flu vaccine, within six, if you have an HIV test within 6 months of getting that flu vaccine, you could test HIV positive. Not because you've ever been exposed or if there, even if there were an HIV, but because you've had that vaccine.
Exactly. And you're helping people actually extricate themselves from the legal system's complaints or accusations that they have infected people intentionally by not telling them their quote-unquote HIV status, correct?
Well, this is the other problem. If you really take the if people take the time to read the studies that have look at whether or not HIV can be transmitted sexually. The biggest study in the United States was a 10-year prospective study done by Nancy Padian out of California. And so what she did is she looked at what they call discordant partners. One partner is HIV positive, the other is HIV negative. They did not always use condoms. As a matter of fact, they often did not use condoms. And over that 10-year period, not one partner became infected.
And okay, that, Nancy, okay, hold on. There's that music. We're going to break. We have to do a news update with bogus stuff. That's all I'll say. Hold on, we'll be back.
At News Talk, we know times are bad. Ever since 9/11, a battle has been waging against we the people. Our Constitution is under attack.